Hello, friends, family, and that one guy who's been in my Instagram DMs for the past 3 years, and welcome to the podcast that nobody asked for, but we're doing it anyway. I'm Alex.
And I'm Madison, and if you stick around for a full episode and promise to come back every week, I think I might be willing to pay you. I'll pay you to listen to us. How does that sound?
Except for legal reasons, we're not actually going to do that.
I'm serious, though. My DMs are open for requests at all times.
Anyways, we're two peas in a podcast, the brainchild of two overly caffeinated journalism students.
And in this podcast, we talk about trending topics and give you answers to the questions that you're too scared to ask.
So to kick things off for our first episode, we wanted to start off by discussing university life.
Yeah, we're going to be discussing the good, the bad, and the ugly about university and let you guys know what Ryerson is really like.
We're going to spill the tea on Ryerson School of Journalism, expose the snakes in the grass, and reveal all the details about our university lives.
Yeah, like in first year when Alex told me to go back to Carleton.
And I'm still waiting for you to go back, so anytime now.
Yeah, it's true. Ryerson was not my first choice, even though it should have been, but hey, you live and you learn. That's why I started at Carleton.
Yeah, and I originally went to Durham College, shout out the dirty schwa, so Madison and I both kind of went to universities and colleges before we came to Ryerson.
If you are in the journalism program, then you know that there aren't very many schools to choose from when it comes to majoring in journalism at a university or college. So I guess for me, that's why I started off at Carleton, was because it was pretty much either Carleton or Ryerson. And what I did notice about Carleton was you didn't need a portfolio to get in. You just had to have, I believe it was a 90 average. And I just really kind of wanted to leave. I had been home my whole life and I just kind of wanted to get away. And it wasn't because my parents were strict or anything. And like, that's why most kids go away for school, I guess. But I just wanted to get out of the city. I had met my roommates online and in a Facebook group. And they were pretty decent for the first month, I would say. And then, you know, kind of turned ugly. I have an article on it, so I'm not going to get too into it, but I just knew that it wasn't the place for me, and I guess it was important to realize that first year, because then I made the decision to go to Ryerson.
Yeah, and I mean, I started off at Durham College, so I'm from Durham region, and I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to start off going into journalism for sure. I didn't know if I wanted to commit to the 4 years at Ryerson. So I saw that Durham had a broadcast journalism program that was only 2 years. So I thought, hey, you know what, I'm going to try out this program, see if I like it. And then because of just how timing worked out, then Ryerson would look at my grades from Durham College instead of looking at my high school grades, which they were good, but they weren't necessarily amazing. And once I graduated Durham College, I mean, it was kind of more of a stepping stone for me than an actual school decision to go there. I mean, it wasn't a bad experience at all. It definitely gave me a lot of skills that prepared me for coming to Ryerson Journalism. It gave me a lot of audiovisual skills. It gave
like
me
editing this fucking podcast.
it gave me a lot of editing skills. Like, now I'm an editing pro and I love doing it. So it definitely taught me a lot of the basics that helped me kind of adapt into Ryerson and learning.
No, that's what I think is really important though. Like at Carleton, we had one textbook and it was a big 300-page textbook, and it was very much about the history of journalism and typewriters and yellow journalism, which is essentially fake news. And there were never any hands-on assignments like Ryerson has. Like, I know first day we started in J school at Ryerson, we were thrown into the streets to get essentially streeters. And for those of you who don't know, it's pretty much interviewing random people that you meet on the streets, getting their contact information, and pretty much getting all up in their personal space. But Carleton never had anything hands-on. There was one assignment, and that's pretty much the gist of it, which was super unfortunate, and which is why one of the reasons is that I think that Ryerson might be a better school for people going into journalism. I'm just pretty biased, I guess, because of my experience at Carleton. But
and I think our experiences with our pre-college experience really differ, because Durham College actually did prepare me for the hands-on aspect, which was really nice. You know, they threw us out and they made us do streeters. We'd walk around the college campus and interview people and, you know, do videos, do radio stuff. We'd do a lot of print stuff. So it kind of prepared us in the same way, but it also didn't feel like it was as serious. Like, it felt very lax and very kind of like, oh, a lot of people faked their streeters, or a lot of people just didn't really give a shit. Whereas when you came to Ryerson, it was a lot more serious and you could tell that people actually wanted to be there. Whereas at Durham College, a lot of people were just kind of there because it was a bullshit 2-year course and they didn't really know what else to do. So I kind of felt like it was a stepping stone in the sense that people didn't really care to be there, and it wasn't really something that people were proud of or dedicated to. But coming into Ryerson, it was a completely different environment where people actually gave a shit. They wanted to be there every day, and they actually put a lot of effort into their work. So it was nice to see that change, but still have the background experience preparing me to come into a program like this.
And I feel like at Ryerson, too, I don't know if you witnessed any of this at Durham College, but at Ryerson, everyone's very focused on getting out there and editing for magazines and editing for publications or starting websites and blogs and stuff like that. And I feel like at Carleton, they didn't really have any of that. I know there was kind of like their version of the JCU. So just like course organization and stuff like that for socials and other events and whatnot, like pub nights. But I don't really know of anyone who was really writing. I mean, I did one article in the Charlatan, which is like their newspaper, but no one was really focused on, oh, here's a magazine, here's this, here's that, because everyone over there was all about politics and government writing, and they're pretty much just taking classes, and no one was really getting out there, which is why I think Ryerson's such a creative choice for a journalism student, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't really have a lot of extracurricular stuff going on either. I mean, I hosted a radio show every Fridays at Durham, but that was I did. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't like our class ran the school newspaper. So I think it was either two times a month or monthly. I don't remember, but every so often we'd come out with a new issue. I think it was monthly, and we would just be in charge of running the newspaper every month, kind of similar to the Ryersonian here and how it's very student run and it's not necessarily independent like the Eye-Opener, but it's student run. So it was the same thing. So you could either choose, if you were in the broadcasting side, to go and do the radio show every week, or you could choose to go and do the more print side. And you could still rent, you could still cross over and do both if you wanted to. So I did write for print and I did do the radio as well. So it kind of gave you that opportunity, but it wasn't as social. And I still, like I said, people didn't really give a shit and didn't really want to be there. So it was really hard to work with people when you cared about your work and you wanted to produce good stuff, but people just didn't give a shit, you know, like it was just kind of like a bird course. They just wanted some kind of bullshit diploma to hold them up and, you know, get them a basic job. And I mean, not to talk shit about it, because it was a good program and it did really, you know, set me up for success. But I just wish that the people that I went to school with cared more and kind of were more social and wanted to involve themselves more in the work.
Yeah, it's definitely very advantageous to have the happy medium that I think most journalism students at Ryerson can speak on behalf of, where they're involved in editing, they're involved in going to their classes, they're involved in extracurriculars, but they're also engaged in the social aspect and making friends and learning from it and bonding with their teachers and having their teachers care about them and putting in the work and the time to do good journalism and produce good work.
And I mean, the thing about, you know, balancing the social life and stuff, there also comes into, you know, balancing working and trying to make money and keep your head afloat when you're in university or college. And I think that's something that Madison and I both definitely have experience with. I mean,
tell me about it.
I mean, I work full times in the summers to try to keep myself afloat during the school year, and Madison works crazy hours.
I gotta go to work after this.
Yeah, so we're definitely keep ourselves busy, and it's definitely a balancing act trying to keep our heads above water with working. And
you really have to be good at time management.
Yeah, not being a broke bitch, but still going out and having social life and having fun, well, as much as you can during COVID and with what's open and what's not. But nonetheless, I think that just kind of having a balance of working life, having a really strong work ethic with school, and still kind of, you know, having fun and having, you know, a social life outside of everything else, I think that's really important.
It comes down to working hard and playing hard and doing both in such a way that you can achieve your good grades, but you can also keep your social life, and like whether it be minimal or not, you still have some sort of social life. You're still connecting with your friends and the people around you. Especially as Alex said, with everything going on right now, it is very hard and super important to reach out to your loved ones and the people that you care about to make sure they're all doing well. Because I know it's a difficult time for everyone, and everyone is going through it completely differently with their own experience. So yeah, I think that's really, really important to keep in mind, especially at Ryerson.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm really thankful for all the friends that I've made and all the social experiences that I've been able to have through Ryerson. I think that that's really keeping me sane during a time like this where everything's so much more extra stressful and there's so much going on. And I mean, you know, even thinking back to like how Madison and I met in first year. So we've been friends for 2 or 3 years now, still going strong. And I mean, we still keep each other sane and, you know, we support each other.
Yeah, let's go with sane.
Yeah, even though I still want her to go back to Carleton, I mean, we're still there for each other. And I mean, we've been together for 3 years now, decided to start a podcast just to kind of get our thoughts out in the public, even though no one's probably going to listen to it anyway.
No, no one cares.
I mean, unless you want to go into Madison's DMs and get that $10 or whatever.
So Madison and I are in our third year of journalism now, and somehow time has passed so quickly that we're at that point now. But we met in our first year in Dan's lab in our first year of journalism, and we became friends pretty quickly through a mutual crush in the class.
Oh my god, you cannot. This is ridiculous. It's honestly so embarrassing.
But I mean, it's so embarrassing that I think everybody in our program also knows about it, because
I think everyone had a crush on him too. They just don't want to admit it, but it's okay.
I mean, yeah, but that's kind of how we bonded, is we got paired up on an assignment just randomly and became friends. And then we started Snapchatting that night about liking the same guy in our class and kind of just gushing over him and being stupid, bonding over this random guy in our class. And to this day, like, we're both kind of not into him at all and kind of repulsed by him, but that's a whole different topic of conversation. But that whole class kind of turned out to have a reputation with throughout the rest of the program as being a cult, because everyone in that class got so close and became such good friends.
But it wasn't even our fault. It was just everyone's personality kind of meshed with each other, and Dan was really good at giving us group exercises and making one half of the classroom join the other. And, like, I mean, there were a bunch of other labs, but I don't think they ever grew as close as our lab did, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and I feel like everyone in that class, too, was just very, for the most part, very extroverted and very social and kind of had a lot in common. So it was very easy for a lot of us to become friends and, you know, grab drinks after class or go out for dinner or, you know, just hang out outside of class, where I feel like a lot of labs, I don't want to say we're jealous of that, but I feel like wish that they had that kind of relationship, because we did gain that reputation as kind of being Dan's cult of a lab, just because everyone was so close and loved Dan as a teacher so much. That was like, so it's kind of cool to start off on that foot of becoming friends.
Well, I also feel like as a journalist, you kind of need that social experience, and you kind of not necessarily need to be extroverted, but you need to be able to rid yourself of social anxiety and be comfortable working in teams and, like, group situations. And I feel like working with Dan challenged that for a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a good thing, I guess. Like, I know we're still known to this day as Dan's cult, but I mean, like, I wouldn't change it for the world. The kind of parties and stuff that we do, the hangouts, the studying, and the then, everything, it's kind of worth it to me, at least.
I mean, even to this day, like, all the people that we were in Dan's class with, I'm still, like, we're both still very good friends with to this day in our third year, and I think that's kind of rare to find friends that can kind of last through university and not just through one or two classes, so that was pretty cool. But I mean, even as we discussed earlier, just with, like, starting university and, like, growth and whatnot, I feel like starting off on that foot of having, you know, a really social group of people in one of your first classes and meeting those kind of people that kind of encourage you to be friends and, you know, grab coffee or go out for drinks after class, that really starts on the right foot of, you know, being productive and having a really good social setting in university when you don't really know anyone yet. So I think that was a really cool place to start off on. But on that note as well, you know, you get really close to these people and you start to really trust people, but
Alex, is it story time? I don't know.
I think it's story time.
Boiling,
I think
a
it's
over
story
here.
Time. You know, you start to trust people and you get a little too comfortable with some people, but the little unknown fact about Ryerson journalism is that it's a very cutthroat program. It's very competitive.
Snake bitches all around.
And a lot of people are very competitive to kind of come out on top, and, you know, if that means at the expense of someone else's success or their education,
passing a class,
then so be it. And I'm gonna pass that off to Miss Madison Dolman to tell about her little experience with a thing we like to call academic misconduct.
Thank you, Alex. I'm honestly very pleased to tell this story. It's probably a rainy day, you know, sometime in February after my mental breakdowns.
Which one?
So we're doing a feature story, and long story short, I find out that the feature place that I want to do can't accept pictures anymore, and I can't use them for whatever reason. So no problem. I pick somewhere else, and lo and behold, that works out fine for a few of the assignments. Anyone in journalism knows that we had a bunch of different assignments that we had to do leading up to the feature that were kind of interactives, multimedia, and whatnot. And then eventually I get an email from our professor, whose name I'm not going to disclose for legal reasons, and he decided that based upon an email that someone had sent him.
Anonymously.
Anonymous.
Bitches don't have the balls to even sign their name at the end of said email.
He decided that I needed to be accused for academic misconduct. Now, me over here, I'm like, okay, fuck, like, this isn't a good thing. How am I going to get out of this? Especially when I know I'm not guilty. So, this is right around COVID and whatnot, and honestly, I was kind of freaking out.
Stress was already high enough. It was pretty much midterm season. COVID was just about, like, the shutdown was 2 weeks away from happening. COVID was reaching its peak of stress, and everyone was already kind of freaking out because it was just starting to move to North America. We already kind of got the feeling that school was going to shut down, and we were also trying to finish our features. These features are worth a huge chunk of our mark in this class. It was the biggest assignment of the year. And then, of course, Madison gets hit with this massive email saying, oh, you've been flagged for plagiarism and academic misconduct, and this could affect your grade, this could affect you being, you know, kept in the program, and all this nonsense, all based off of an anonymous email, and the people who wrote it, who I hope are listening, didn't even have...
Oh, I hope they're listening.
If you're listening, comment below. But they didn't even have the balls to sign their name. It was signed by, I think, three people that were anonymous, which... We have a theory where some people that knew you very closely and wanted to drag you under the bus.
Oh, 100%, because the things that were included in that email, although I was familiar with the place of the feature and for legal reasons, I can disclose that because my professor does know that, but they had said some things that they thought were true about my relationship with members of the people in the feature, which were actually untrue, and seemingly when this happened, it was... After two things, after the first draft of the feature was due, which would make it impossible for me to switch features, so whoever had suggested this, anonymously, once again, take a shot every time we say anonymously, you'd be on the floor, which would have made it impossible for me to switch features and get a passing grade. You know where I'm from, B's don't get degrees, C's don't get degrees, only E's get degrees, so that would have been a problem. And it was right after I got her campus junior editor, which is a position I'm still thankful to hold to this day. However, it made me feel like there was some malicious intent behind whoever, anonymously, decided to try and accuse me of academic misconduct.
And I mean, that was probably one of a few multiple times that we've realized that there are some snakes in the grass in Ryerson journalism, just because, you know, a lot of people like to be social and, you know, be fun and... really, like, friendly in person or even on social media and whatnot, just to kind of, you know, network and create this facade of being, like, popular and well-liked and great people. But behind closed doors, people like to be really shady and tear people down if it means that they're going to be successful. And I think that that's something that a lot of people in a lot of programs don't like to talk about. But I feel like because journalism is a really competitive industry and a competitive program at this school, that it's even more so than a lot of other programs. I mean, not to say that other programs aren't, but it's definitely something that Madison and I have for sure experienced in our three lovely years at Ryerson Journalism. And I mean, even, you know, in our program, we have this thing that we call J-cest, where, you know, if two people in our program in the same year and different years start to date, it's like this big forbidden thing that people freak out over. And there are a few people that have dated or, you know, even like gone out for dinner and whatnot, and people love to run their mouth about it. And I think that it's just so ridiculous how much people, you know, they love to talk or they love to run their mouth about shit that's not even necessarily true.
No, I completely agree with that. And just to let anyone know who is listening, part of our previous discussion about academic misconduct, I still did finish that class with an A+. So fucking I would like you all to fuck yourselves. But anyways, I do agree with Alex on the issue at hand, which is J-cest. I know a bunch of us have been exposed to it. A bunch of us have been examples of it. And I don't necessarily agree with it, but I also do think that people running their mouth is kind of unnecessary. People like to paint a bigger picture of what they think actually happened just to get drama out of it or to have something go about their day, something interesting, cause some conflict, excite someone, excite themselves, just spread shit pretty much. And I don't really think I'm here for it. Are you?
Which I think it's pretty ironic because in journalism itself, you know, we pride ourselves on transparency and accuracy and all of that, you know, wonderful stuff that we're taught in lectures that we don't actually pay attention to. But then the same people who pride themselves on that, they love to run their mouth of, oh, did you hear that so-and-so, they hooked up at a party on Saturday? Or, oh my God, did you hear that so-and-so went on a date? And like, none of the stuff's true, but people just love to talk if they see someone hang out. I think that it's just so funny how excited people can get over, you know, silly nonsense and drama like that when it might not be true. Or even if it is, I mean, I also think it's no one's business in the first place.
No, I definitely agree. I've noticed a few instances where that's happened. People like to be hypocrites and kind of run their mouth a bit about things and then go and turn around and do exactly what they were kind of talking shit about. And, you know, I don't really think that kind of stuff is anyone's business. I mean, I don't think their love lives or their dinner dates should be anyone's business. But in J school, unfortunately, everyone likes to make everything their business. And you can't really walk 2 feet without someone talking about you, whether it's good or bad. And I think that's kind of a real problem that I hope that the younger years avoid, or try to avoid at least. I'm not sure if any younger years will really be listening to us, but I think it's something that's
just
to
the
be
one
said.
Guy from my Instagram DMs,
just
honestly.
The one guy. Hello, one guy from Instagram.
But I mean the journalism program and the journalism community, they're such a close-knit community anyway that like people are bound to talk and gossip, as is with any kind of, you know, community or organization. But so just to clarify, when we discuss the term J-cest, which obviously the term itself is pretty obvious in what it means, but for us it's kind of frowned upon to, I guess, date anybody or have any kind of romantic or sexual relationships with anyone in the same industry as you, just because of conflict of interest and, you know, power dynamics and whatnot. But I feel like in this given situation in university, I feel like university kids are going to do what they're going to do. So I feel like it's kind of a stupid, you know, label or stigma to put on university students.
It's like
when
a taboo label.
Yeah, when there's not even really, I mean, a power dynamic or, you know, a conflict of interest between fellow university students anyway. Like, you wouldn't have that in, like, a business program or like a nursing program. Like, there wouldn't be that same thing. So I don't really see how journalism students are subjected to that kind of stigma. Whereas, like, you know, obviously if you're working for like a news organization, then of course there's going to be conflict of interest and like power dynamics of like, you know, having relations with someone who's higher up than you or whatever. But if you're a university student, you know, you go out with someone who's in your podcasting class or something, like, I don't really see an issue with that. But I feel like a lot of upper years have kind of created that stigma, and past students have kind of just created that term of J-cest, and it's kind of just been passed down. Because I know I heard about it when I was in my first year, and I had no idea what the hell it was until it was explained to me. And I just remember thinking that it was so stupid, because if I was taking, you know, accounting, or I was taking business management or something, like, I could date a business management student and it would be an issue. But if a journalism student does, then it is an issue. And I think that that's kind of messed up and kind of limiting an already pretty limited dating pool in university in general.
I think it goes with the transparency and professionalist kind of aspect that J school prides themselves on having. I mean, I understand it. I understand it's necessary as journalism students to kind of grow into that and learn from it from the beginning of university. But I do think that the way that we're taught about professionalism and just all that kind of thing is a little bit troublesome in a way. Like, they kind of drill it into your heads from the very beginning in such a way that it makes you scared to mess up. It makes you scared to do anything. Like, for example, when I got my tattoo, I knew I couldn't get it anywhere that you could see it because I'm a journalism mm-hmm. student and because it's not professional. But then it also goes into asking yourself, what is considered professional? Why are mm-hmm. business students considered to act the same way and whatnot, mm-hmm. you know?
No, and I mean, I think the professionalism standards are definitely changing, you know, year by year. Is, you know, before I remember that, like, a lot of businesses wouldn't hire people with tattoos in general, and now it's definitely become more of an acceptable thing. So I think that those standards are definitely changing. But I just think that as far as dating as students, I think that it's just such a strange and limiting thing for this program in general. But if we were taking any other program, then it wouldn't be an issue. So I just think that it's such a silly concept that a lot of people in our program, and especially our year, I've noticed, have gotten so wrapped up in with, like, oh, did you hear that Madison and so-and-so are talking, and oh, they're texting, and oh, they're like, they're going out or whatever.
It's ridiculous.
And it's like, no, and it's like most of it's not even true, but people just love to run their mouth and gossip, especially people that don't even know you that well. And it's just so funny how much people love, it's like a little like weird celebrity gossip column where people just love to talk about people that they don't even know and make up these random allegations that aren't even true. And it's just so funny to try to keep up with them, because you'll hear a rumor about yourself when you're like, oh, did I do that last weekend? Because I definitely didn't, but people are saying that I did.
No, you're right. It's like you follow me on Insta and you see me in the Ven, but does that mean you know me? No, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean you know mm-hmm. me. Like, I can count on two hands the amount of people in the program that know me, and I can count on two hands and both my feet the amount of people who've probably talked about me. And it just goes to show it's the same with everyone. Honestly, everyone's in the same boat, but it's kind of like ridiculous, I guess, if you ask me. I don't even have a better word for it. Like, it's just kind of annoying at this point. Like, we're in our third year. Some of us are 20, some of us are 21, some of us are older than that. Hell, you're almost 24.
Don't age me in public, Christ. I'm still 21 if you ask me. My ID says otherwise, but in my heart, I'm still 21.
The ID that you lost at Gracie's?
8 times.
Did you find it?
Oh, no, I never found it. They know me at Service Ontario by first name because I show up and they say, hey, you lost another driver's license? I said, indeed, I did. I'm on my 8th.
That's so beautiful.
So if you open up my glove box in my car, I have about 7 temporary driver's licenses, and I just keep collecting them. I want to see how many I can get by the time I die.
Don't ever tell anyone that.
I just did publicly, so it's too late, I guess.
Okay, on the note of professionalism, can we talk about the portfolio and how, as of last year, Ryerson Journalism applicants do not need a portfolio any longer to apply for the program?
Right, so with Ryerson Journalism, originally, the application process
was fucked.
It was lengthy. Like, you had to submit an essay, you had to submit a portfolio of, I think it was 2 or 3 pieces that you've had published either in, you know, your school's newspaper or some kind of publication to prove that you actually know how to write and you're not illiterate.
Some short stories, a resume, a couple references, cover letter.
It was long. Like, I remember it took me like 2 days to fill out and whatever. But I mean, I think the thing that prided this particular program on it being, you know, so well respected and such a great school for journalism specifically was the fact that it weeded out everybody that wasn't pretty much good enough to get in by, you know, having the portfolio, having submit pieces and a resume and an essay and all this stuff. But then I believe it was last year that Ryerson stopped taking portfolios and applications. So it was just basically, you know, your transcript from high school, your grade 12 U or M English and
your resume,
all that nonsense and shit. But you didn't need a portfolio anymore, which basically means that anyone could get into the program just based on grades alone and not actually knowing how to write or being, you know, talented or actually having a passion for, you know, writing and producing content for, you know, public audiences. And I think that's pretty concerning that, you know, in this day and age where I feel like a lot of people think, you know, with fake news and a lot of people just, you know, publishing shit for the hell of it on Twitter or on Instagram and just trying to get followers and all this shit that Ryerson's willing to take these people that, you know, might not necessarily have the right chops to make it into such a competitive and such a high respected program. And I think that's kind of concerning, if you ask me.
No, you know, from the beginning, I kind of thought at first the portfolio thing was a scam. I thought everyone just kind of got in. I knew it was competitive, but I was kind of like, no one's going to apply to journalism, whatever. Mm. And then I found out a few people in our program had actually been waitlisted before they got accepted. So I was like, oh shit, like, denial's real here. Like, they're actually saying no to a bunch of people. Mm. And then, as previously talked about, like, I can kind of relate it back to Carleton and agree with what you said in the sense that now that they've eliminated the portfolio, it's kind of like, well, who gives a fuck about writing? Mm. With Carleton, when we applied, it was literally based on grades. It was, okay, you had a 90 average in high school, perfect, you're set, you're smart. Never even cared if you knew how to write. Half of the people in that program, I guarantee you, could not write 2 sentences and string them together if they tried their hardest. But Ryerson was great because the grade average that you needed to achieve in grade 12 was lower. However, it required 15 to 17 pieces of work, like cover letters, samples, references, everything that would get you a job in the future and that would guarantee your entry into this program. Now, I'm not saying that eliminating the portfolio is good because it is certainly the worst thing that probably could have happened to the program. And I recall sitting in the Ven talking about this with a bunch of fellow colleagues. However, I do understand the issue about published work and how I know some schools never had like newspapers or some students were never able to be published. So they thought that kind of put them, like, I know I was speaking to someone who didn't have a newspaper at her school and she feels that that's why she got waitlisted. So although I do think they could have changed the requirements a little bit because it is kind of hefty for a grade 12 and like if you're from a small town, odds of you having published work is slim to none. Mm-hmm. But I do think the competitiveness is what drives people to really want to be in this program and that's what motivates you to be in this program. So the portfolio elimination kind of really set me aback, to be honest.
No, and I like that point because I think accessibility is an issue with the portfolio and I understand that. perspective of why they might have decided to cut it out. But I think that there needed to be a common ground found between, you know, the accessibility of maybe not necessarily having published works available to submit for the portfolio application, but still finding some kind of common ground where people could submit, you know, some kind of work that would fit into the role of journalism and, you know, not necessarily like fictional work, but it's just some kind of writing to prove that, you know how to tell a nonfiction story, you know how to, you know, write cohesively beginning, middle, end, and, you know, that you're not going to come into this story, kind of this program starting from, you know, ground zero and kind of have to build your way up, because the journalism program, it doesn't teach you how to write. It teaches you how to write for the medium of journalism, but you're already expected to know how to tell a story, you know, how to write, how to spell check and make sure that your writing is coherent and makes sense from beginning to end and all that stuff, which I feel like, especially in like, you know, high school English, it's very easy to write a bullshit essay and just make sure like, oh, there's no spelling errors. It makes sense. It's an easy 80, whatever. But I mean, then applying that, you know, you're a decent writer in high school to be like, okay, now can I tell this story, add my own voice to it and add my own spin to it. And you know, add all the stuff that you actually are taught in the journal. Because like the journalism program doesn't teach you how to write. You should already know how to write. You know, you can't be illiterate.
You don't know how to write, you can't be in this program. No. I'm sorry to tell you.
No, like if you're illiterate and like you just know that you're not a strong writer, then it's not. And you know, I feel like if you take away the portfolio, any kind of portfolio, it doesn't have to be published work. Because I do agree that accessibility is an issue with that, especially if you're from a smaller town. You know, there's no school newspaper, or you can't submit your work to any kind of public medium, then yeah, that's definitely an issue. But I feel at the same time there needs to be some kind of common ground found where people can still submit some kind of work for screening to make sure that, you know, just because this person has good grades doesn't mean they're necessarily good for the program. And that takes away from the competitiveness, and it takes away from the pride of it too, of saying, oh, I got into this program, because now I feel like
you didn't work for shit to get in
if
there.
You apply to it now and you're part of, you know, you're the class of 2024, 2025 in the next few years, then it's like, okay, well, you got into Ryerson Journalism, so what? You just had to send in your grade 12 grades and maybe a bullshit resume, and like you got in, and it's not that much of a pride thing anymore. And I think that's a bit of an issue, and I think that that's something that the school should really consider, because it should be something that students pride themselves on by getting into one of the most competitive journalism programs in the country. And I feel like it might not be that anymore, and that's kind of worrying for me, because if I were to say, you know, in 5 years, oh yeah, I graduated from Ryerson Journalism, and it's not that much of a pride thing anymore, then I mean, not that necessarily you just go to school because of the pride, but it's definitely a bonus and a reason why people come to the school, because of the name and, you know, the reputation that the school and this program has.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking, is what the heck are the first years going to do? Because, man, I don't know many first years. I've definitely only spoken to a few of them, but what if they aren't prepared for Streeters? What if they aren't prepared for the 8-hour story days? What if they have no idea what they're getting themselves into? Because we had no idea. When we all took that picture on orientation, we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. And then after the first 8-hour lab, we were thrown into the streets to get Streeters about Egerton Ryerson and all the bullshit that he comes with. But that's for
But I mean, at least when we got thrown into all that madness of journalism, at least we had the fundamentals of knowing how to write behind us, that we weren't just sitting there saying like, okay, I don't even know how to write it. I don't know how to write an essay. I don't know how to write a proper paragraph. I don't know proper grammar. Like, I don't know how you could function on such a high stress and a very quick deadline and oriented environment and expect yourself to thrive. When like, I know a lot of people in like second year and first year who don't even know like the difference between your and your apostrophe R.
Or what a head or a deck are.
Or like there, there, and there. Like, there are so many people out there who don't know basic like grammar and punctuation and a bunch of spelling stuff, that if you come into a program like this where you're expected to be very well versed in language and, you know, writing and dialogue, that if you just come in here without the basics, you know, you're already setting yourself up for failure. So I feel like the portfolio kind of weeds that out and prepares you for kind of having your shit together before day one, so that when you get thrown into all the chaos that is story days and making quick 5-hour deadlines and talking to sources and whatever, that you already kind of have the basis of writing and, you know, meeting deadlines and being productive and whatnot behind your shoulders, that you're ready to get into the chaotic mess that is year one of journalism.
Well, yeah, and with everything going on right now, they're gonna be screwed when next year they're thrown into the crowd and their profs are like, oh, go get Streeters or go to this place and interview this person for your feature, and they're not gonna know how to do it. They're not gonna know what Videolicious is. They're not gonna know what Adobe Audition is. They're not gonna know what any of these programs and softwares are. They're not gonna know how to act, because the socialization aspect is gone. The way that we were brought into journalism will never be the way they were brought into journalism. And God forbid someone who might just think journalism's a bird course, might have enrolled himself in journalism and hopes to God he gets A's just because he wants to go to university and wants to party. Although Ryerson's not really the party scene, so I don't really know
terrible why party choose school. That. Don't choose Ryerson if you want to party.
0 out of 10. Would not recommend. I would try Laurier, honestly, or Western. Anyways, pretty much with what I have to say about that is that I don't think the journalism kids that are in first year this year are ready to be journalists. And I think that says a lot, and I think that speaks pretty loudly. But if you were to compare us in our first year to what they will be like in first year, I understand there are different circumstances. I understand COVID is a thing. Not everyone can be on res. Not everyone can interact. Whatever. Mm. I get it. But the moral of the story is that portfolio leaving the journalism application was the worst thing that the RSJ could have possibly done.
And I mean, just for sake of unbiased, I don't actually know their full reasoning behind it. And I'm sure the accessibility is one of the issues.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, not to just completely throw them under the bus, but I think that it is just based off of talking to fellow journalism students about the issue, I feel like a lot of journalism students are on the same page with it, and that, you know, they're kind of concerned with it just kind of being an easy to apply to program now. And I feel like it's kind of taken away from the pride and
working so hard to get to where we are.
Yeah. And you know, I mean there is always like maintaining good grades in high school and, you know, getting into a good university and whatnot, but then throwing on top of it, you know, you have to put together a really good portfolio that, you know, impresses the admissions board, and the whole process of writing, you know, a cover letter and an essay and the resume and all that stuff put in together to actually like impress people and not get waitlisted like a lot of our fellow students did. I feel like it just kind of takes away from the whole application process of, you know, getting into the program and, you know, feeling proud that you got in, because a lot of people didn't, or a lot of people got waitlisted and then did manage to get in. But you know what I mean? Like it's just creating a really impressive application was a big part of applying to Ryerson Journalism. Now that that's not the case anymore. And, you know, like you said, COVID is a big issue too. And I actually don't know how they're going to change first year based off of COVID and what they're going to do. I mean, we still don't even know what they're really going to do with third year either. It's pretty much up in the air.
We don't even know what the winter's like. I know schools like Laurier already have announced that they're online for the winter, and we have no idea what's going on. So
no, I mean, even like our more hands-on courses, like we haven't heard anything about that either. So a lot of it is up in the air, and it's just us kind of talking out of our asses about these topics. But at the same time, like a lot of it is touch and go and trying to figure out what
mutual bias too on people who kind of agreed with us
longer. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that, I mean, in first year, as far as like not necessarily them being as prepared as we were, I think that, I mean, unfortunately starting university during the pandemic where they don't really have the same opportunities as we might, or even that people who are in second year now that were in first year last year might have had, you know, doing their first readers or doing their first story days, I'm sure it's going to be immensely different than what we went through.
And I mean, feel for them.
Yeah, honestly. No, it's like I was talking to one of our friends in our year, and he said to me, he was like, even though we're pretty much losing out on our third year of, you know, university, it would suck way more to be starting your first year or be going into your fourth year. So I mean, shout out to first years and fourth years who are in school right now, because I feel like those
you're
are
living
two,
through a trying yeah, time.
Like those are the two shittiest years to be doing anything, you know, trying to find an internship in fourth year during a pandemic or starting university during a pandemic too, and like not knowing what the hell is going on, because I'm in third year and I don't know what the hell is going on most of the time. And like we're on day
one.
We're on day six of school right now, and like I don't know what's
it's
going
12:20. We're pretty much exhausted,
yeah,
you know
and it's
we're
like
going
we're
on day seven,
we're barely a week in and it's already a mess. And I feel that like people in their first year of any program, not just journalism, are just kind of figuring their shit out. And you know, university is such a new territory, and entering that plus COVID and, you know, online classes and Zoom and asynchronous and synchronous classes and all this mess, it's just so hard to keep up with. So I mean, kudos to anyone who's, you know, not lucky enough to be in their second or third year when shit doesn't matter as much. And you know, at least in third year we've already kind of got our shit figured out and we kind of know the basis of things, but first year is like really when you start to learn the ropes of journalism and what it means to be a journalist and, you know, how to conduct streeters and interviews and network and whatnot. I feel like people are losing out on that.
Don't get to meet Gary Gould in person, which is obviously the most important part. But
shout out Gary Gould, the king of RSJ.
But no, this isn't really us throwing J-School under the bus completely.
No.
It's just kind of there's a lot beyond what J School prides himself to be, and I think it's worth discussing, especially when you've experienced it, especially when you've lived it, especially when you have mental breakdowns over it every night. Like, it's definitely the program to be in. I would never change it for the world, but...
No, but I think in this day and age, it's still very important to hold organizations accountable and, you know, kind of voice your thoughts and concerns on a lot of common issues that especially other people that you've spoken to have, you know, faced the same issues or they have voiced the same concerns. And I mean, it's important that as amazing as our Shay is, and as, you know, like Sam, I wouldn't change it for the world. It's changed my life. I love the program, but it's still very important, you know, voice your concerns and hold organizations accountable for, you know, areas where they might've fucked up, and pretending that something's perfect isn't, you know, it's not genuine. It doesn't help anyone in pretending that something's, you know, perfect. And I think that it's important to have people that, you know, call people out on their shit, whether it's a person or an organization, and just say, listen.
It's misleading to not. There's a lot more stress and a lot more work that goes into it than they let on. And it's just kind of frustrating when they aren't being held accountable for their actions. That being said, university has definitely had its ups and downs for sure, but I don't think either of us would change it for the world.
Yeah, it's definitely been a wild ride so far, but I mean, it's still been an amazing one nonetheless, and I'm really excited to see what the next 2 years bring.
I couldn't agree with you more, Alex.
Well, that just about wraps up our time for this week's episode.
Next week, we'll be talking about all things dating apps and sharing some of our best
and worst
Tinder stories.
And if you tune in, Madison might pay you, so there's that.
My DMs are open!
See you guys here next Friday. Bye for now!